أقم الصلاة لدلوك الشمس إلى غسق الليل وقرآن الفجر إن قرآن الفجر كان مشهودا.
Establish prayer from the declining of the sun to the darkness of the night, and hold fast to the recitation of the Quran at dawn, for the recitation of the Quran at dawn is witnessed. Establish prayer. Reference to these difficulties and hardships is followed by the command to establish prayer in a subtle way. This draws our attention to the fact that the patience and steadfastness required of a believer in times of such adversity can only be obtained by establishing prayer. From the declining of the sun, we have taken Duluk al-Shams to mean decline of the sun, and have done so even though we are aware that some companions and successors have interpreted it to mean sunset as well. The majority opinion, however, is that the expression signifies decline of the sun after reaching the meridian. Umar Abdullah ibn Umar, Anas ibn Malik, Abu Barza al-Aslami, Hassan al-Basri, Sha'bi, Atah, Mujahid, and according to one of the reports, Ibn Abbas are of the same view. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir and Imam Jafar al-Sadiq are also reported to be in favor of this interpretation. In fact, even some traditions from the Prophet, peace be upon him, albeit traditions which are not especially sound in terms of their chain of narration, also explain Duluk al-Shams to mean the same. To the darkness of the night. Ghasak al-Layl is considered by some to mean the thickening of the night, or the spread of total darkness, and by others simply to mean midnight. According to the first sense, it suggests the earliest time for the Isha prayer, and according to the second, the time limit for performing this. And hold fast to the recitation of the Quran at dawn. Fajr literally means dawn, the time when the light of the morning makes its first appearance after piercing the veil of night's darkness. Quran al-Fajr here signifies the Fajr prayer. On certain occasions, the Quran uses the expression salah for prayer, but on other occasions, any one of several acts of salah has been mentioned. For example, tasbih, glorifying God, hamd, praise, zikr, remembrance, qiyam, standing, ruku, bowing, and sujood, prostration. Any one of these acts standing for salah as a whole. This verse refers to the recitation of the Quran in the Fajr prayer rather than to merely reciting it during the hours of the morning. The Quran thus indirectly suggests the different acts which comprise prayer. Guided by these allusions, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, laid down the component parts of prayer and which the Muslims continue to follow to this day. For the recitation of the Quran at dawn is witnessed. The statement that Quran al-Fajr, the morning prayer, is witnessed means that it is witnessed by angels, a fact that also has been clearly stated in the traditions. Although angels witness all prayers, as they indeed witness all good deeds, the recitation of the Quran in morning prayer has an importance all of its own. The reason being that in this prayer, the Prophet, peace be upon him, used to prolong his recitation of the Quranic verses. The companions followed the same practice, and Muslim jurists subsequently declared a lengthy recitation in Fajr prayer to be a recommended or preferable mustahab act. Incidentally, this verse also hints at the times for the five obligatory prayers which were prescribed on the occasion of the Prophet's ascension. According to this verse, the first prayer, Fajr, should be offered before sunrise, and the remaining four prayers should be offered between the time beginning with the decline of the sun through to the thickening of the night. This directive was further elaborated by Gabriel, who provided the Prophet, peace be upon him, with information concerning the time of each prayer. We find a tradition from Ibn Abbas in both Abu Dawud and Al-Tirmizi, which sheds light on the question. On the authority of Ibn Abbas, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, Gabriel was twice leader of the prayer which I offered near the Kaaba. On the first occasion, he offered the Zuhr prayer when the sun had just passed the meridian, no more than the thong of a shoe. Then he led the Asr prayer when the shadow of everything was equal to its size. Then he led the Maghrib prayer at the time when the sun had just set and a man breaks his fast. Then he led the Isha prayer as soon as the red glow of twilight, Shafaq, disappeared. Then he offered the Fajr prayer when the morning light had just appeared, at the time when eating becomes forbidden for him who fasts. On the second occasion, he led the Zuhr prayer when the shadow of everything was equal to its size, and Asr prayer when the shadow of everything became double its size, and Maghrib prayer at its previous time, and offered the Isha prayer when a third of the night had passed, and he offered the Fajr prayer when there was a fair amount of light to make the earth visible. Gabriel turned to me and said, Muhammad, peace be upon him, these are the times of the prayers as observed by the prophets before you. The right time of each prayer is between the two time limits. There are allusions to the times of prayer in the Quran itself. For example, in Surah Hud, it is said, and establish the prayer at the two ends of the day and in the first hours of the night. Hud 11:114. A similar point is made in Surah Taha. And glorify Allah, praising Him before sunrise and before sunset, and glorify Him in the watches of the night and at the end of the day. Taha 20:130. We also learn from Surah Al-Rum, so give glory to Allah when you reach eventide and when you rise in the morning. To Him be praise in the heavens and the earth, and in the late afternoon and when the day begins to decline. Al-Rum 30:17-18. One of the major considerations underlying the regulations concerning the times of prayer is to ensure that any and all resemblance to rituals of sun worship is excluded. It should be borne in mind that the sun was always one of the greatest deities, and that its worshippers were especially wont to offer their thanks and prayers at sunrise and sunset. Hence, to offer prayer precisely at the time when the sun was rising or setting was prohibited. Likewise, worship of the sun was especially performed when the sun reached the meridian. It was therefore enjoined upon Muslims to offer the morning prayer before the sun had risen, and that the prayers of the daytime be offered after the sun was past the meridian. This consideration is clearly stated by the Prophet, peace be upon him, in several traditions. Amr ibn Abasa relates that when he asked the Prophet, peace be upon him, about the time when prayers should be offered, he replied, offer the morning prayer until the time of sunrise, then refrain from offering prayer until the sun goes well up, for at the time when it rises between the two horns of the devil. This is the moment when the unbelievers prostrate themselves before it. After mentioning the Asr prayer, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, offer the Asr prayer and then refrain from praying until the sun sets. For when the sun sets, it sets between the two horns of the devil. This is the time when the unbelievers prostrate themselves before it. The statement that the sun rises and sets between the horns of the devil made in this tradition is a metaphor. The underlying reason behind the metaphor is that the devil has made the time of sunrise and sunset a means by which he can mislead many people. In other words, when people prostrate themselves at the sight of the rising or setting sun, it seems as if Satan has brought the sun on his head and that he is carrying it away on his head. The equivocation in the statement is removed by the Prophet's own statement, viz., that the unbelievers prostrate themselves before it at that moment. This clearly explains the reason for the interdiction of prayer at sunrise, sunset, and midday.
وَمِنَ اللَّيْلِ فَتَهَجَّدْ بِهِ نَافِلَةً لَكَ عَسَىٰ أَنْ يَبْعَثَكَ رَبُّكَ مَقَامًا مَحْمُودًا.
And rise from sleep during the night as well. An additional prayer for you. Possibly, your Lord will raise you to an honored position. And rise from sleep during the night as well. The word tahajjud means to rouse oneself from sleep. To perform tahajjud at night signifies the act of rising from sleep during the night and then praying. An additional prayer for you. The word nafl signifies supererogation, something over and above that which is obligatory. The use of this word suggests that whereas the five prayers mentioned earlier are obligatory, the sixth referred to here is in addition. Possibly, your Lord will raise you to an honored position. Here it is proclaimed that God will bestow upon the Prophet, peace be upon him, an exalted position in both the present world and the next. It will be a position of eminence, and one which will evoke universal appreciation and praise. It will be in sharp contrast to the situation that was obtaining at that time when the Prophet's opponents heaped every kind of derogation, abuse, and slander upon him. For the time was not far off when the whole world would reverberate with tributes paid to the Prophet, peace be upon him, and these by all and sundry. This will be the exalted position of the Prophet, peace be upon him, in the present world. As for the next world, there too the Prophet, peace be upon him, will be the object of everyone's praise. There he will enjoy a position of unique privilege in that God will accept his intercession. This forms an integral part of the exalted station mentioned in this verse.
وَقُلْ رَبِّ أَدْخِلْنِي مُدْخَلَ صِدْقٍ وَأَخْرِجْنِي مُخْرَجَ صِدْقٍ وَجَعَلْنِي مِنْ لَدُنْكَ سُلْطَانًا نَصِيرًا.
And pray, my Lord, cause me to enter wherever it be with truth, and cause me to exit wherever it be with truth, and support me with authority from yourself. And pray, my Lord, cause me to enter wherever it be with truth, and cause me to exit wherever it be with truth. This prayer taught to the Prophet, peace be upon him, by God is significant. It indicates that the time of migration was close at hand. It is for this reason that he is directed to pray such that he might always adhere to the truth. If he leaves a place, he should do so for the sake of truth. And if he enters a place, he should also do so for the sake of truth. And support me with authority from yourself. The prayer consists of asking God either to endow him with authority or to aid him by causing some governmental authority to be his supporter, such that he might restore righteousness, stem the tide of lewdness and sin, and make God's law of justice prevail in a world steeped in corruption. This is the sense in which Hasan al-Basri and Qatada interpreted this verse. The same interpretation was adopted by such high-standing commentators on the Quran as Al-Tabari and Ibn Kathir. The interpretation is further corroborated by the following tradition. God eradicates by means of authority what he does not eradicate by means of the Quran. This shows that the reform which Islam seeks to bring about cannot be accomplished merely by preaching and by sermons. Accomplishment of that reform also requires the use of political power and authority. Now, since God himself taught the Prophet, peace be upon him, to pray for such an authority, it is quite evident that to seek governmental power and to strive for its acquisition so as to make the true faith prevail in human life, and so as to implement the Sharia and to enforce the punishments laid down in God's law, is not only lawful, but is also both required and desirable. It is also evident from this that those who denounce the seeking of political power as sheer worldliness are altogether mistaken. For the charge of worldliness only applies if someone seeks political power for their own personal ends. It is quite different if it is sought solely to promote the cause of the true faith. In that case, far from being an act of worldliness, it is an unmistakable requisite of godliness. For if obtaining a sword and waging jihad is not a sin, then how can it be sinful to obtain political authority to enforce the injunctions of the Sharia?
وَقُلْ جَاءَ الْحَقُّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلُ إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا.
And proclaim, the truth has come, and falsehood has vanished. Surely, falsehood is ever bound to vanish. And proclaim, the truth has come, and falsehood has vanished. Surely, falsehood is ever bound to vanish. This declaration came at a time when a large number of Muslims had forsaken their hearth and home in Mecca and taken refuge in Abyssinia. As for the rest of the Muslims, they were living a miserable life in and around Mecca, suffering from harsh persecutions. Even the life of the Prophet, peace be upon him, was constantly in danger. The forces of falsehood seemed preponderant. There were no signs promising the success of the truth, even in the distant future. Against this backdrop, the Prophet, peace be upon him, was asked to proclaim to the unbelievers that the truth had come and that falsehood had perished. Given the situation pertaining at that time, his proclamation appeared to many people at best a tall claim, and the unbelievers simply laughed it away. Within 9 years of that declaration, however, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had entered Mecca as its conqueror, destroying falsehood symbolized by the more than 360 idols which lay in the precincts of the Kaaba.
According to Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, on the day of the conquest of Mecca, as the Prophet, peace be upon him, struck the idols in the Kaaba, he repeatedly said, "The truth has come and falsehood has perished." Indeed, falsehood was destined to perish. The truth has come, and falsehood shall neither make its appearance nor return.
وَنُنَزِّلُ مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ مَا هُوَ شِفَاءٌ وَرَحْمَةٌ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَلَا يَزِيدُ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا خَسَارًا.
What we are sending down in the course of revealing the Quran is a healing and a grace for those who have faith, but it adds only to the ruin of the wrongdoers. What we are sending down in the course of revealing the Quran is a healing and a grace for those who have faith, but it adds only to the ruin of the wrongdoers.
The Quran is God's mercy for those who seek to be guided by it and who follow its teachings. The Quran cures such people of all the intellectual, spiritual, social, and cultural maladies which bedevil their lives. As for the evildoers who reject the Quran and willfully turn away from it, its impact is quite different. Such people are not allowed to remain in the state in which they were at the time before the Quran was revealed, or when they were ignorant of the Quran. The loss which they will suffer will be that much greater than anything they suffered previously. For the loss which they suffered before the Quran was revealed, or before they knew about it, was a loss caused by ignorance. But if someone has been made aware of the Quran and its message, and thus knew the distinction between truth and falsehood, then there was no excuse for him not to follow the truth. If that person continued to reject it and adamantly persisted in his effort, then this means that he is not simply ignorant, but also perverse and iniquitous. He consciously loves falsehood and has an innate revulsion against the truth. Such a person is akin to those who, after becoming aware of the difference between poison and its antidote, deliberately opt for the former. In view of their awareness, such people will be considered fully responsible for their errors and will be duly punished for the sins they commit. They will suffer not on account of their prior ignorance, but on account of their persistent perversity. Hence, the loss they will suffer is bound to be greater than that of those who are simply ignorant. This point is eloquently, albeit succinctly, expressed in the following words. The Quran will either be an evidence in your favor or against you.
وَإِذَا أَنْعَمْنَا عَلَى الْإِنسَانِ أَعْرَضَ وَنَأَى بِجَانِبِهِ وَإِذَا مَسَّهُ الشَّرُّ كَانَ يَأُوسًا.
Whenever we bestow favors upon man, he arrogantly turns away and draws aside. And whenever evil visits him, he is in utter despair.
قُلْ كُلٌّ يَعْمَلُ عَلَى شَاكِلَتِهِ فَرَبُّكُمْ أَعْلَمُ بِمَنْ هُوَ أَهْدَى سَبِيلًا.
Say, O Prophet, each one acts according to his own manner. Your Lord knows well who is best guided to the right path.